alive on the night of October 11th, Brent Scowcroft.
This is the Quality News Network. On its website, the New York Times says U.S. intelligence agencies will issue a report today criticizing Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. The Times says there is concern the Prime Minister is incapable of finding a solution to his country's increasing sectarian violence. Al-Qaeda attacked two Sunni villages this morning east of Baquba, killing at least 32 and wounding another 22. Sunnis fought back, killing 10 of the invaders. During their retreat, Al-Qaeda militants kidnapped 15 women and children. Yesterday, an attack on a U.S. military outpost in northern Iraq killed 4 Iraqi soldiers and wounded 11 U.S. troops. In addition, 1 U.S. soldier was killed and 3 others wounded during combat west of Baghdad. In southern Afghanistan, 2 Canadian soldiers and an Afghan interpreter were killed today near Kandahar. Another Canadian soldier and 2 foreign reporters were wounded in the same incident. Hurricane Dean, now a tropical depression, is expected today to dissipate over the central mountains of Mexico. Authorities say a major concern now is the heavy rains drenching the region, swelling rivers and undercutting landslide-prone hillsides. Ohio's governor has declared a state of emergency as residents flee rain-swollen floods. At least 40 people have died in the past week throughout the Midwest. Firefighters say cooler temperatures and lessening winds are providing some relief for those battling wildfires in Montana, Idaho, and California. Hundreds of thousands of acres have been scorched. Some fires have been burning for as long as 2 months. New Jersey's Attorney General has ordered law enforcement officers to notify federal immigration authorities whenever a lawbreaker is determined to be an illegal immigrant. In Blacksburg, Virginia, an advisory panel investigating the Virginia Tech massacre says in the future, authorities should identify and monitor students seen as disturbed. The group also recommends increased campus security. In Utah, the owner of the Crandall Canyon coal mine says rescue efforts will continue throughout the weekend, even though there is little hope of finding the 6 men trapped by a cave-in 2 weeks ago. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Hey, what's he doing?
What?
That guy is changing his oil in the street and letting it run right in the storm drain, which pollutes the bay. I totally wouldn't surf in that.
Dude, what can we do?
Call 1-800-CLEANUP to report anyone dumping oil, antifreeze, or paint in the street.
This way, fools like that can be fined.
Tell everyone to call 1-800-CLEANUP.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Geologists in Australia have discovered diamonds thought to be more than 4 billion years old. Scientists say the gem's existence indicates the Earth may have cooled more rapidly than originally thought. A consortium of 2 Canadian provinces and 6 western states announced they've signed a regional agreement promising to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 15% within the next 13 years. Hormel Foods announced its quarterly profits fell 4% over this time last year, citing poor sales in some of its products like Chunk Chicken. Sales topped $1.5 billion. Personal information for more than 1.5 million users of job site Monster.com has been stolen by hackers. The thieves used a Trojan horse virus to steal the data from the site's computer servers. Lehman Brothers says it intends to close down one of its home lending units and lay off 1,200 employees. The Wall Street firm confirmed the move would result in a $52 million quarterly charge.
Financial Times reports a large Western oil company, probably Shell, has offered to pay $700 million for Iraqi oil assets in Kurdish territory. The newspaper says the proposal indicates oil companies are willing to invest in the region despite severe security difficulties. Light sweet crude at $69.62 a barrel. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions of Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox!
Well, all right. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here, everybody. It's another wondrous day of programming here at the Head On Radio Network. Oh, it's been a nutty week over here, I got to tell you. And a little bit of a programming note. I know this is like the first time I've done a full week's programming in ages. But guess what? I'm going on vacation next week. And it's actually the first holiday I've been on in probably 5 years. So Gail and I are heading off to the South Coast for a little while. I'm going to go stay down off the rainforest down in Mogo, New South Wales, which is an old gold mining town, actually. So it should be kind of cool. I'm looking really, really forward to it. So not exactly. I think we'll just be having the regular day's rerun programming going in my spot next week because, well, I haven't been doing that many shows as of late, but that's all changing. But anyway, we're going to do this. I'm looking really forward to it. It's going to be nice to get the hell out of Sydney for a little while, and that's that. Enough with the programming note. Anyway. I swear, you really, really got to worry about this time that we live in and those that are supposedly claiming or to protect us. From crikey.com.au and my wonderful little subscriber news dump that I get every day, this is amazing. About 2 days ago, I've been mentioning this whole Dr. Hanif thing, this guy who was completely stitched up by the Australian Federal Police as supposedly giving material support to Roddy Ra to the failed Glasgow bombing, and it ended up being just a complete stitch-up. And the Australian Federal Police kept leaking bits of transcripts of his federal police interviews, and they were all really out of context things that really
we're just absolutely smearing this doctor's reputation. So for the second time in this saga, Mr. Hanif's lawyers have released the entire transcript. Now, there's a few things that are very worrisome. First of all, people in the Australian media who have been going through the 300-plus pages of the transcript are saying that this thing just completely backs up Hanif's side of the story, that he had nothing to do with it. In fact, because he was going back to India to visit his newly born child, this is the whole reason that he was flying back to India when they picked him up. He just had a baby born. His wife still lives in India. And he even expected that there would be some questions about his cousin coming back to him. So he even contacted authorities, giving them all of his contact details and where he'd be in India while he was away, because he felt he had some concerns, shall we say. And these transcripts are giving some of us some serious concerns about just, you know, when you go to an amusement park and there's that, you know, sign that says you must be at least so high to take this ride, or when it's a kiddie ride, if you're too tall, you can't have this ride. Well, I think that there must be a sign going into the Australian Federal Police Academy that says if your IQ is above this point, you can't be an Australian federal policeman. Get this. Now, first of all, whoever wrote these transcripts, geez, they're horrible. They're really hard to read. Now, I know that when you're transcribing something that was conversational, there can be stutters and things like that. It's not, you know, it's not always eloquent, but some of this is just absolutely awful. I don't see people even speaking like this. However, from Crikey, they say, start wading through the 300-plus pages of the Hanif transcript released yesterday, and you'll soon be worried, not necessarily about terrorism, but about the ability of the flatfoot feds to protect us. The AFP seems to be coming to grips with the intertubes, but yes, you can talk online. Okay, get this. Now, Dr. Hanif's cousin was the Mohammed guy involved in Glasgow. And so you have Detective Sims asking, now, does Mohammed have a mobile telephone? Hanif, no. Sims, he doesn't? How do you contact Mohammed? Hanif, normally I call him on this phone. On this phone? Says Sims. Or sometimes we chat on Yahoo, says Hanif. You chat on Yahoo? Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you... Does he have an email address? Or how does that work with chat on Yahoo? How does that work with chat on Yahoo? These are the people that are supposedly, you know, doing high-tech surveillance on people in the war on terror? It gets better. Crikey continues and says, and yes, there's this thing called Skype. You've heard of the telephone, right? Well, it's sort of like Mr. Alexander Graham Bell's device, but you use your computer. Back to the transcript. Hanif, yeah, and Sim says, yeah, okay, does Mohammed have any other contact usernames or emails? Hanif, I don't know. Sims, you do know, you haven't used any others to contact him with? Hanif, no, sometimes we use Skype. Sims, mm-hmm, how does that work? Hanif, that's just an internet calling. Sims, okay, I'm unfamiliar with that, that's all. What do you need for that? Hanif, you have to register and get a login ID. Sims, you've contacted Mohammed through Skype, have you? Yes, I have. And what does he need on the other end to be able to talk to you? He needs to have a Skype ID as well. Hanif, okay, so you register through Skype. Do you know his? Sorry, this is the detective. See, they can't even get the. They can't even write this thing right. Do you know his registration details through what his registration details through Skype are, Hanif? I don't remember exactly. I just write his name. I don't remember his exact details. Sims. Okay. Do you keep a contact list of people that you? Yeah, all of the friends and things are just there on the system. Sims. Okay. We'll go back to that. Now, what about your Skype? Yeah, says Hanif. Sims, is there a particular... Sorry, I just don't know how it works. I don't know. Can you tell me what is your registration details for Skype? And it goes on where they ask him about him requesting vegetarian dishes, and he says, well, yes, I have. And he says... Has that been the sergeant asks? Has that been facilitated? And Hanif says, "They did organize for halal meals for me. Halal meals. Okay. Yep. That's okay. They've given that to you every day. So they don't even know the difference between halal and vegetarian. This is insanity. This is the Australian Federal Police. They don't know you can chat on Yahoo, and they don't know what the hell Skype is." And we're supposed to have confidence in these people? We're supposed to take their word for it? They're insane. They are absolutely insane. And it is just absolutely pathetic. Oh. You know... What are they using all this money for? Aside from buying $600,000 friggin' water cannons to use on protesters at APEC. I haven't had a chance. I have the complete transcripts. I've downloaded them. I haven't had a chance to go through them yet, and I don't know if I want to. I think I'm just going to end up throwing things. and the Australian Federal Police have threatened Hanif's lawyers with action through the Queensland Legal Council, whatever. They're not going to go after him. The legal council's been the same body has been the ones that have been going, the government's just completely overstepping its bounds here. They have no case. The case against this man has been dismissed. The original criminal case on this has been dismissed. And they're still trying to claim that this man is a threat. You know, and it's just absolute bully stuff. Also from Crikey here, Greg Barnes, who says bully boy stuff from the AFP. At first, I thought it was someone taking the mickey out of the Australian Federal Police. But no, it's for real. Believe it or not, the AFP actually issued a media release yesterday. You can read it in full below, in which they claim that there has been no leaking by them in the Hanif case. And for good measure, the AFP thinks what Dr. Hanif's legal team did yesterday in releasing the second record of interview was unethical. The AFP claims in seriousness that its own... Note, there has been no independent external investigation. Inquiries have led it to the view that there has been no unlawful disclosure of information by AFP members. Oh, really? So it has been leaking information about the Hanif investigation with a clear view of smearing Dr. Hanif over the past month. If not the investigators, then who? It's certainly not Dr. Hanif's lawyers. And speaking of Dr. Hanif's lawyers, how's this for bully boy stuff from the AFP? The continuing attempts by Dr. Hanif's defense team to use the media to run their case is both unprofessional and inappropriate, and the AFP has raised the aspect with the Queensland Legal Services Commission. Dr. Hanif's lawyers have acted ethically and responsibly throughout this matter, unlike the political masters of the AFP, like Mr. Ruddock and Mr. Andrews. And since when has it been unethical or unprofessional or inappropriate to give the media a copy of your client's record of interview? In fact, if the AFP was serious about ethics and professionalism, why doesn't it pick on Mr. Ruddock and Mr. Andrews, who have done nothing except smear Dr. Hanif ever since he was arrested? It's interesting to note that no senior AFP officer put his or her name to yesterday's media release, and there is no media contact name at the end of the release, just as well given its bizarre and inaccurate content. Absolutely, absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. And this poor man, you know, I just... what this guy's been through, why he'd want to come back here, but he's determined, and I think it's probably purely just to prove and make an ass out of the AFP and the Howard government. You know, I just if it was me, if I were you, if I was you, I'd do this. I'd fight the case from overseas. But I think, I get the impression that this guy actually cared enough about the job that he was doing and probably the life that he had here that he wants to come back and continue it. And, I don't know, that to me just shows a great amount of class. All right. From there, I'm going to go and tell you a really fun story. Has to do with today's track of the day. You've heard this a couple times in the last week or so. This bit of music, organ, big drums, double bass thing that... from a band called the Shuffle Kings that I've told you about, this band that can pull out 3,500 songs from 1902 to 2007 at any moment. And I used to do sounds for these guys, and it was a great fun gig. It was easy, and these guys are all awesome players. Now, the track I'm going to play is a song that they used to do. They used to just walk right off the front of the stage and come down to the dance floor in whatever, you know, RSL club or whatever we were in, and do a bit of direct acoustic stuff. So it would be Paul on double bass singing through a megaphone, harmonica, snare drum and brushes, accordion, and then acoustic guitar. And in this moment, I would get away from the mixing board and I would go and grab one of the acoustics and join them on the dance floor and do this little segment. And the guy who did sound before me was also a guitar player, so he'd come out, you know, same thing. It was just kind of a tradition, so he'd come out and play. And now this is from their home studio recording of this track, so there's a little bit more involved, but still, you have this sound of the vocalist, who's also the double bass player, singing through what sounds like a megaphone. But that's exactly how we did it. He had a megaphone gaff taped to a microphone stand with the trigger locked on, and he sang straight through the megaphone, and the place would just go absolutely nuts, absolutely nuts. And it was great fun, you know. It was my favorite part of the night. No PA, no nothing, just organic noise and bringing the whole audience. And I mean, they pack these places, and they're still playing. I really should get Paul over here one night. And you just get this mad circle of people around you, and they'd be dancing, and you'd always wait until people were, you know, super drunk. Which, you know, is fairly common down here in Australia, you know. Beer drinking is a national pastime. But this is just a classic song. It's been covered so many times. One of my favorite covers of it is Paul McCartney. Did a brilliant version. But the Shuffle Kings, I reckon, are just a great band. A band that you will never see. However, you can order the CD online, and I believe it's just theshuffle.com.au. And they really, really are great, and one of the best stand-up bass players I've ever known. He's a monster. So without further ado, with Red Dress, the Shuffle Kings, roll it, Bob.
Thank you. There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view. You can tell Bush is really getting desperate because now he himself is bringing up Vietnam. But instead of recognizing it for what it was, a reckless imperial overreach just like his own Iraq War, Bush twists the history of the Vietnam War to try to buttress the one he's got us in now. Get this, he says we should have stayed in Vietnam longer. He says the price of America's withdrawal was paid by millions of innocent citizens. He's counting the victims of the Khmer Rouge, by the way, who came to power only after the U.S. ruined Cambodia. And he's not counting the 3 million people the U.S. killed in Southeast Asia, just as he's not counting the 70,000 to 700,000 civilian Iraqis his war has killed, or the 1 in 10 who've been forced to leave their homes. And what, by the way, does Bush suggest we should have done in Vietnam? The North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong were overrunning Saigon. The U.S. embassy personnel barely got away in helicopters off the roof. And despite more bombs tossed on the Vietnamese than all the bombs during World War II, the U.S. couldn't prevail there. Bush is rewriting history, never his best subject. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Again, I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out to the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. And that's what they are. Kick him in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
No, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio. 11 a.m. to noon weekdays here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Oh, right on. Very cool. Welcome back, everybody. Boxed up here on the Head On Radio Network, kicking off another day of conversation radio here on your home for liberal talk. I don't do this enough. You know, if you want to get on the program, you know, 1-877-443-2366, feel free to give us a call. I know I usually kind of like just rant along and it, with diarrhea of the mouth for an hour every morning. But if you want to jump in on things, please feel free. Now, you know that we always talk about, you know, Bush's connection to fundamentalist Christians and all that kind of thing. Well, you know, that's not unique to Bush and his right wingers and you know, the United States. Johnny Howard got outed the other day, and we've been wondering why this has not been a story before. There is a group here in Australia known as the Exclusive Brethren. Now, they are currently under investigation by the Australian Electoral Commission for donations and support for Howard's last campaign. Now, not that there's anything wrong with private groups donating, you know, there's nothing illegal about that per se. However, this is a cult. This is purely and simply a wacko Christian cult. They break up families. They don't vote. They feel that governments are an extension of God, and that man that God tells them what to do, so you should not vote. This is one of those really, really, really weird outfits. Now, Howard and Costello had behind closed doors meetings with them, and it finally came out in the news. I mean, there's been this connection for years, and the mainstream media has never picked up on it. And the Age, I believe this was yesterday or day before yesterday, had an exclusive, and then finally everyone picked up on it. And I was really happy to see that even the Murdoch television news referred to them as a sect, and Channel 9 even referred to them as a cult. Now, also, it's a crikey show day today, and they have a little snippet from the authorized website of the Exclusive Brethren, and this is what they say about themselves. The Exclusive Brethren practice separation from evil, recognizing this as God's principle of unity. They shun the conduits of evil communications, television, the radio, and the internet. Their charter is 2 Timothy 2:19. The Lord knows those who... You go to the Bible and I automatically start choking. The Lord knows those that are His, and let everyone who names the name of the Lord withdraw from iniquity. Exclusive Brethren believe in government and are subject to it as outlined by Paul in Romans 13:1. They do not live in countries that do not have Christian government. Their approach is non-political. They do not vote, but hold government in the highest respect as God's ministers, used by Him to restrain evil and provide conditions for the promotion of glad tidings. Exclusive Brethren hold formal prayer meetings every week and include prayers for the support and guidance of the right government, which is clearly of God, and also for divine resistance to the devil's efforts to influence it. Contact with members of Parliament or Congress is encouraged to express a moral viewpoint of legislation in relation to the rights of God, and this ongoing communication is found to be acceptable and productive. Now, Howard actually, with a straight face, turned around and says, I don't see what all the hubbub is about, meeting with the leader of a community group. A community group that is, you know, a sect that is under investigation for the very donations and support of your campaigns? You little bug. Peter Costello, his second in command, says, there's nothing wrong with meeting with the exclusive brethren. They're Australian citizens just like anybody else, but they don't vote. And this is a country where voting is mandatory. Why are not the exclusive brethren being fined or jailed for failing to, you know, vote? It's illegal not to vote in Australia. It's not like the United States. It is a cult. And there are horrible, horrible stories from this. And as soon as this broke in the Age, the opposition leader was straight out, and the opposition leader is a devout Christian, and he said, this is a cult. They break up families, they do damage, they keep children from their parents. Someone in the chat is asking if they're a branch of the Jehovah's Witnesses. I don't know about that, but, you know, six of one, half dozen of another, you know, it feels very much like the same thing. And the part of where the investigation comes into, too, is, from what I remember, a lot of the money that went into the Howard campaign came from the branch of this group that's in New Zealand. So that can't be legal. And it's made quite a splash, and we've been wondering why, you know, for years, why this has not been a huge story in a country where it is illegal not to vote. And that is one of their crucial things. And members who decide to leave, you know, won't be able, it, very much like the Jehovah's Witnesses, You know, father gets fed up, figures out that it's a scam. His family doesn't quite figure it out. He gets out. He's not allowed to see his family. And then they start to character assassinate the ex-member. And I can see on the road in the chat room going, illegal not to vote in Australia. It is your civic duty. And this is something that I think would be really good for the United States to pick up, because it's a whole lot harder to fudge elections when everybody votes. You know what I mean? And you get a much better representation, obviously, because everybody's voted. And you can't... It's a whole lot harder for political operatives to deny people their right to vote if it's the law that you have to. You can't play games like exclusion lists, etc., and so forth. So, you know, and I think all this stuff is continuing to come out finally on Howard. And Howard is just playing Mr. I'm the man, and I decide, don't you know? Because I don't know if it happened today, but it's happening very soon. Johnny Howard is going to, without public debate, without a public, you know, vote, without any discussion in Parliament, he is going to mandate 25 nuclear power plants for the east coast of Australia. And here's the catch. He's going to set it up in such a way that if Labor wins the election, it will cost the Australian government billions in fines to undo the deals. This is one of the Howard tricks. Come up with policy that is so convoluted and complex and organized in such a way that trying to dismantle it is destructive to the very system. This is classic Howard, the slime bug tactic. And how can you trust anyone with eyebrows like that? Oh, he's a freak. He's an absolute freak. On American Environmental News, and this subject is obviously close to the hearts of many of us on the network due to the fact that the home studios in West Virginia, I believe Gene sent this to me, from opednews.com, rule to expand mountaintop coal mining. More of a bad idea, isn't that great? The Bush administration is set to issue a regulation on Friday that would enshrine the coal mining practice of mountaintop removal. The technique involves blasting off the tops of mountains and dumping the rubble into valleys and streams. Mountaintop mining is the most common strip mining in central Appalachia and the most destructive. Ridge tops are flattened with bulldozers and dynamite, clearing all vegetation. So they are going to enshrine this as, it's our God-given right, damn it. So the federal government's going to get involved with this. I wish there was a little bit more information, but that's the whole piece. Perhaps Net knows a little bit more about this. And then that's in the chat room going, I wanted to barf. I'm telling you, it's... And Bob is, of course, you know, I mean, it almost goes without saying, but nary a peep will be heard from West Virginia's congressional delegation. It's because, as we all know, they're bought and sold by the coal companies. And, you know, I was hearing that mine owner on Bob's show last night, and I was just beside myself. And now Bob was telling me before we started something about this ass saying something about that it was, you know, it was God's doing, so why should we, you know, be looking back at it or being too concerned about it? Pardon the you-know-what out of me. And again, I go back to that conversation that Bob and I had probably almost 2 years ago about you know, sponsorships and things. You know, if the union came to me and said, you know, we'll sponsor the show, but you got to stop blasting the coal industry, I say, you know, sorry, no. Because I believe in people's human rights, and I believe that we shouldn't still be in the 21st century sticking good men and women down dangerous, dark death traps in which to run our societies. I cannot say it strong enough. I really just, you know, coal power generation here is really going to start to become a totally, you know, non-viable thing as water becomes more scarce. During this drought, we've already had problems where three different coal plants up in Queensland have had to stop running because they didn't have the water to fill the turbines. We got to start doing other things. There are other options. You know, I know that there are other options. You know, this is the sunniest bloody place on the planet. Why are we not doing solar geothermal? Why are there not, you know, solar panels on each and every bloody Australian home? I did see something interesting. I actually heard it. I didn't get to see it because I was cooking. Tonight on the ABC, there's a really great program called Catalyst. It's a science program, and they've been doing, and they focus mostly on environmental issues and things regarding the human body. And they had a piece, and Tim Flannery was involved, and he's the Australian of the Year, author of The Weathermakers, which is just a wonderful book, which I'm working my way through still. And they've come up with this process, and they're testing it, and it has to do with creating or highly organic mattered soil. Now, I'm not going to get into too much detail yet because I've got to do more research on it, but basically the idea is you burn organic matter in an oxygenless environment, and it produces two things. It produces this high organic matter soil, which is wonderful for growing crops. Also, that soil is a huge carbon sink. And in fact, it also removes almost all of the nitrous oxide that it would usually release. And in the burning process, it actually creates fuel in which to generate electricity. And what they're finding out, that not only is it carbon neutral, but it's carbon negative. And growing crops in this soil, and basically what they're basically recreating soil that you can find, I believe, deep in the Amazon basin. And they've been running some larger scale tests of this in plantations for avocados, and you know they were showing pictures of, you know, one bed of avocado one of the examples they showed was corn in regular just stuck in the ground, and then there was in this, I can't remember what they called the soil, this stuff. It's complete. It's dirt. It's just a special kind of dirt, and it was like three or four times the output because it's so rich in organic matter, and it becomes a massive carbon sink. And they're reckoning that this could be one of those huge, huge band-aids. Not even band-aids. A huge move forward in dealing with a whole bunch of problems all at once. A way of actually turning back, you know, the carbon clock. Now, I'm just getting an email here from the net on what this whole
thing with the mountaintop removal is. Good, I got about 10 minutes left. Excellent. Okay. The Bush administration is set to issue a regulation on Friday that would enshrine the coal mining practice of mountaintop removal, blah, 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 the thing that I read before. It says, it has been used in Appalachian coal industry for over 20 years under a cloud of legal and regulatory confusion. The new rule would allow the practice to continue and expand, providing only that mine operators minimize the debris and cause the least environmental harm through those terms, though those terms are not clearly defined, and some extent merely restate existing law. The Office of Surface Mining in the Interior Department drafted the rule, which will be subject to a 60-day comment period and could be revised, although officials indicated that it was not likely to be changed substantially. The regulation is in culmination of 6.5 years of work by the administration to make it easier for mining companies to dig more coal and meet growing energy demands and reduce dependence on foreign oil. Government and industry officials say the rules are needed to clarify existing laws which have been challenged in court and applied unevenly. A spokeswoman for the National Mining Association, Luke Popovich, said that unless mine owners were allowed to dump mine waste in streams and valleys, it would be impossible to operate in mountainous regions like West Virginia and hold some of the richest low-sulfur coal seams. In mining, all mining generates huge volumes of waste, known as excess spoil or overburden, and it has to go somewhere. For years, it has been trucked away and dumped in remote hollows of Appalachia. Environmental activists say the rule change will lead to accelerated pillage of vast tracts of and the obliteration of hundreds of miles of streams in central Appalachia. This is a parting gift to the coal industry from this administration, said Joe Lovett, executive director of the Appalachian Center for the Economy and the Environment in Lewisburg. What is at stake is the future of Appalachia. This is an attempt to make legal what has long been illegal. Don't mind me, I'm just trying to hold back the conniption. I'm feeling my head split. Mr. Levitt said his group and allied environmental and community organizations would consider suing to block the new rule. Mountaintop mining is the most common strip mining in central Appalachia and the most destructive. Ridgetops are flattened with bulldozers and dynamite, clearing all vegetation at times, forcing residents to move. The coal seams are scraped with gigantic machines called drag lines. The law requires mining companies to reclaim and replant the land, but the process always produces excess debris. Roughly half the coal in West Virginia is from mountaintop mining, which is generally cheaper, safer, and more efficient than extraction from underground mines like the Central Canyon mine in Utah, which may have claimed the lives of 9 miners and rescuers, and the Sago mine in West Virginia, where 12 miners were killed last year. The rule, which would apply to waste from both types of mines, is known as the Stream Buffer Zone Rule, first adopted in 1983. It forbids virtually all mining within 100 feet of a river or stream. The Interior Department drafted the proposal to try and clear up a 10-year legal and regulatory dispute over how the 1983 rule should be applied. The changes to be published on Friday in the Federal Register. And it goes on. I mean, this stuff is just insane. Even with the best techniques and most careful reclamation, surface or underground mining will always generate mountains of dirt and rock, he said. There's really no place to put the material except in the upper reaches of hollows. If you can't put anything in a stream, there's really no way to even underground mine. He said the regulation would explicitly state that the buffer zone rule does not apply for hundreds of miles of streams and valleys, and that he hoped, but did not expect, that the rule would end the fight over mine waste. Mr. Lovett of the Appalachian Center said the rule would only stoke a new battle. They are not strengthening the buffer zone rule, he said. They are just destroying it by sleight of hand. They are removing one of the few protections streams now have from the most egregious mining activities. Ah, thank you, Nanette. Thank you very much for that.
This is just, and that was via the New York Times, I do believe. You know, this stuff just really does my head in. It absolutely does my head in. And the idea that being even the 100 feet from a stream buffer zone, I mean, what kind of protection is that? That's no protection. That's just a line in the sand. That doesn't do anything to keep the waste and all the runoff and all the sulfur and all the other crap from running straight into the stream. I mean, but then again, we know that the Bush administration, you know, just would never consider any kind of regulation that wouldn't make it, you know, stupid easy for them to just pull more of that crap out of the ground, destroy more property, destroy more of Mother Nature, and then not to mention the damage that the coal does when it's burned. A conversation that we had with a gentleman last week, where I told them about the mine application that was shot down because they took into consideration the environmental damage done by the coal when it was burned in China. And since that didn't pass the environmental damage tests, it was turned down. And I think that may be the way that that things need to go. And it's, you know, folks like our good friend Annette, who just said we live in a war zone, and that's pretty well spot on, I would reckon. I have so much respect for the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch and other such organizations who really, really care about their communities and fight so hard to try and turn this clock back. And it must just be... It must just be a difficult thing to deal with. And as Bob says in the chat room, the biggest problem that they face down there, that your own people are fighting for the other side, because there's that scare tactic of, oh, we can't have regulation, we can't make any changes because your jobs will go, there will be no jobs. Or that always, you know, it's like, what are you going to do? You're gonna take the jobs out of West Virginia? What, are you gonna take the coal with you? Morons. Again, things need to change so that the people's resources are actually owned and controlled by the people, and the companies that make profit off of them have a responsibility back to those communities in which they take those resources from, because they're not their resources. I don't care what the law says. Yeah, and those mountains will never grow back. And that's the shame of it, you know? And you'll have stupid right-wingers talking about the majestic mountains of Appalachia. Yeah, the ones that are still there, you jerk. Yeah, outsource the coal. Outsource these coal mine owners. Outsource them right off I'll stop there. Anyway, folks, thanks for being with us today. We're coming up on the end of things. Cup of Joe is coming up straight after the news. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing today. Thanks to our mods and our bloggers for everything they do. Thanks to Ben Birch of the White Rose Society for the archiving and the streams. Thanks to Scott Berry from B1 Ladder Productions for the music, who has just gotten off the Australian Bob Dylan tour. Can't wait to talk to him. Thanks to you for listening, folks. Really, really appreciate it. So glad that you come around every day for this. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes. Eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be, as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape.
This is the Quality News Network. On its website, the New York Times says U.S. intelligence agencies will issue a report today criticizing Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. The Times says there is concern the Prime Minister is incapable of finding a solution to his country's increasing sectarian violence. Al-Qaeda attacked two Sunni villages this morning east of Bakuba, killing at least 32 and wounding another 22. Sunnis fought back, killing 10 of the invaders. During their retreat, Al-Qaeda militants kidnapped 15 women and children. Yesterday, an attack on a U.S. military outpost in northern Iraq killed 4 Iraqi soldiers and wounded 11 U.S. troops. In addition, 1 U.S. soldier was killed and 3 others wounded during combat west of Baghdad. The Pentagon says it is not possible to deliver enough of its new armored vehicles to Iraq to come anywhere near to meeting its security goals. The Defense Department will provide only 1,500 of the 3,500 promised transports by the end of the year. In southern Afghanistan, 2 Canadian soldiers and an Afghan interpreter were killed today near Kandahar. Another Canadian soldier and 2 foreign reporters were wounded in the same incident. Hurricane Dean, now a tropical depression, is expected today to dissipate over the central mountains of Mexico. Authorities say a major concern now is the heavy rains drenching the region, swelling rivers and undercutting landslide-prone hillsides. Ohio's governor has declared a state of emergency as residents flee rain-swollen floods. At least 40 people have died in the past week throughout the Midwest. Members of the Canadian Parliament are demanding an investigation into allegations undercover Quebec police acted as agents provocateurs to incite violence during peaceful demonstrations at last week's international summit. Law enforcement representatives have denied the accusations. In Blacksburg, Virginia, an advisory panel investigating the Virginia Tech massacre says in the future, authorities should identify and monitor students seen as disturbed. The group also recommends increasing